This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When I was in Puerto Rico, you know, we witnessed firsthand how weak our infrastructure really is. What happened in Puerto Rico could happen here. Just drive across the street. Even in the middle of Silicon Valley, you'll see that all our infrastructure sits on these 50 million wooden poles, and all it takes is one giant disaster to take it down, and we are not prepared for that at all. That's why we think that solar and energy storage and wind power are much more resilient solutions to an emergency response effort like this, but also for future disasters that will definitely come our way. Next year, there'll be more hurricanes.
We've profiled nonprofit startup Empowered by Light in the past because of the organization's good work in developing countries. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to one of its co-founders because of the work they're currently doing in this country. Marco Crapels joins us to discuss his recent trip to Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria. Crapels talks about what compelled him to go, gives us an eyewitness account of the devastation there, and outlines the services Empowered by Light is providing to local Puerto Ricans. Then, on the heels of our discussion with George Mombio, we dig into the Sea Change Radio archive to take a listen to last year's interview with Becky Bond and Zach Exley, two senior advisors for the Bernie Sanders campaign, who influenced Mombio's most recent book. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Marco Crapels. He's the co-founder of EmpoweredByLight.org. Marco, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Great. We've profiled your organization before. We've had your co-founder, Mara Haynes, on, who's explained a little bit about what you guys do, but maybe you can refresh our listeners what the mission of your organization is.
Great, thank you. So EmpoweredByLight.org is a nonprofit, 501c3, and what we really focus on is empowering communities with renewable energy technologies. And we've done this in Africa, in the Amazon, in Nepal, often with indigenous communities, and really helping them leapfrog fossil fuel with solar and batteries, and building microgrids for them, powering their schools and their community centers, giving people the opportunity to read at night. In Zambia, we actually have installed microgrids and at schools where we have significantly been able to improve test results because the school actually was able to get cleaner water. We solar powered the water pumps as well. And when kids have clean water, you can lower their absenteeism rate because they are sick less often, and therefore their attendance rate is improved and their test scores have improved.
And in our previous discussions about your organization, we've always discussed these countries that seem very far off, but your services were needed in this country recently, and you just got back from a trip to Puerto Rico. Perhaps you can explain what you saw on the ground and how your organization is helping.
Yes, we just got back 3 days ago. 2 weeks ago, Captain Bird from the Las Vegas firefighters and I decided that we needed to put our resources together to help out our American brothers and sisters who are in dire need of power and water just a short fly away from us. You know, Empowered by Light is always focused on the developing world, but it turns out that in Puerto Rico right now, even as we're having this interview, there are 2 million people, American citizens, without power, and 1 million American citizens without clean drinking water. So we were able, with the help of our supporter, Mark Ruffalo, who found us a cargo plane, and with Sunrun, who donated panels and batteries, and the firefighters, who became our partners on the ground, and Give Power Foundation, we deployed 15,000 pounds of solar and battery equipment, and as well as water desalination equipment powered by solar. And so far, we've installed two systems at two fire stations, and we are in the process of raising more money for empoweredbylight.org to be able to deploy up to 30 systems by year end throughout the island.
And what will that mean in terms of scale? 30 systems, how many people are going to be able to benefit from these services?
That's right. So for every solar-powered water desalination system, which is $10,000, we can produce 250 gallons of fresh water a day. So that makes a real impact. For instance, there's an island near as part of Puerto Rico called Culebra. And Culebra has a population of 2,500 people. Assuming they each need 1 gallon of fresh drinking water a day, with 10 of those systems, $10,000 each, so with $100,000, we could literally power an entire island with a population of 2,500 and provide them with clean drinking water. So that's just for the water. To provide energy, you know, each system on the fire station that basically powers up a station allows their command control center to work, so 911 calls can be received. I mean, think about this, right? Right when we got there, we got to a fire station where the diesel generator, which is meant to serve as a backup, had actually broken down. They're breaking down everywhere because they're not meant to run 24/7, and that was their only source of power. Without that, they had no power, and they couldn't even take 911 calls. So it was literally a matter of life and death. So in addition to the amount of people that we can serve, it's also being able to make sure that first responders themselves have power, because how can you support your community if you don't have power and can't even receive phone calls?
So walk us through how you wade through the logistics of an effort like this. Who did you connect with, and how did you make sure that your services were being put to use?
So it's hard, right? Because we were watching the humanitarian crisis unfold on TV, and it clearly we sensed that the U.S. government support, or whatever the Trump administration was trying to provide, was just not getting to where it was needed. And so, you know, how can you possibly do better than the U.S. government? So what we decided to do is to basically shortcut the entire process. And because of my friendship with Captain Bird from Las Vegas Firefighters, he was able to connect us directly with the fire commander on the ground in San Juan, Puerto Rico, Commander Cruz, and we decided to partner with them. And so when we found our cargo plane here and we loaded the cargo on the plane in Miami, when we landed the cargo plane in Puerto Rico, the firefighters were there, backed up their 18-wheeler truck, and we offloaded the equipment. And within 3 hours, we were installing our first system. And there, that would have not been possible without having the firefighters as partners, because they cut through the red tape. There is no red tape. I mean, who's going to stop a firefighter? And they literally told us, this is where we need your help most. That's where we drove. And we had Sunrun's installers and crews with us, and Captain Bird himself, who has installed 40 off-grid systems for his friends in the outer Las Vegas area. And we installed, and 18 hours later, the first system was up and running.
One name that I'm not hearing through all this is FEMA. How did the U.S. government seem to be responding to this tragedy, in your estimation? And did you coordinate with them?
No, we did not coordinate with them. I saw a lot of them in hotels, but I presume, and I'm sure they're doing a great job. I just didn't see them. So I think they're probably focused on getting the big diesel turbines back up and running at the central generation facilities. The problem, though, is that the entire grid is wiped out. If you think about our infrastructure as a country, we are not prepared for climate change. We are not prepared for hurricanes. We're not prepared for massive earthquakes, which one day will come our way. The entire United States energy infrastructure sits on 50 million wooden poles. And when climate change or other disasters wipe out those that infrastructure and those wooden poles start breaking like toothpicks, there is nothing there. I mean, it's crazy that we're such a rich country, yet our infrastructure is so weak. If you go to the Netherlands, you won't find a single cable above ground because they know the weather is going to hit them every year. And the entire transmission and distribution infrastructure has been put underground. And so we are not, you know, we do not have a resilient energy infrastructure in the United States. And so when I was in Puerto Rico, you know, we witnessed firsthand how weak our infrastructure really is. What happened in Puerto Rico could happen here. Just drive across the street. Even in the middle of Silicon Valley, you'll see that all our infrastructure sits on these 50 million wooden poles, and all it takes is one giant disaster to take it down, and we are not prepared for that at all. That's why we think that solar and energy storage and wind power are much more resilient solutions to an emergency response effort like this, but also for future disasters that will definitely come our way. Next year, there'll be more hurricanes. And what are we going to do? Rebuild a diesel-powered infrastructure that's not resilient and that will shut down, and you can't get the diesel truck to where it is needed because there's no road left in certain cases? Or do you build a distributed infrastructure that is more resilient, that harvests natural resources that are abundantly available, like wind and sunshine?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the co-founder of Empowered by Light, Marco Crapels. So, Marco, many of us who've watched the events in Puerto Rico unfold have seen the images of the devastation, but maybe you can give us an anecdote or two of witnessing it firsthand. How has it affected some of the people that you interacted with?
Thank you for that. I mean, it's emotional. When we drove from San Juan, was about a two-hour drive to Utuado, where we went to our next fire station to install the system, both the water system and the solar energy system. We had to stop because there were pickup trucks everywhere parked in the middle of the road next to a mountain hillside, where people were basically getting water out of a river, a contaminated river, and they were, you know, they had gallons of and jars of water and buckets of water they were loading in their pickup trucks to take it back to their homes. And so for me, that was definitely the moment that I broke down. I mean, I sat down with them and I started to cry because, number one, I couldn't believe that it's 2017 and in the United States of America, I mean, Puerto Ricans are American citizens, we have let this happen. I mean, this is 4 weeks. We're 4 weeks after the hurricane hit and people are sitting by a river, and not just one or two. There are grandparents with their grandchildren drinking water from a river, and we're letting this happen. It's a two-hour flight from Miami, and for some reason, we have not addressed this humanitarian crisis. So that really hit me hard. And for some reason, I don't think the help is getting to where it is needed, particularly in the remote areas. And I think we need to do a lot more. And I kind of felt like what we're doing helps elevate the importance of renewable energy as a solution. But I just wish we could do so much more because it felt like a drop in the bucket. And that's one of the reasons why we're raising as much money as we can for empoweredbylight.org. to be able to do more systems so these remote communities can turn to their fire station as a source of energy and a source of water and not have to go to a river.
Well, thank you for going there. And it's encouraging to hear that there are private citizens and nonprofit organizations that are willing to pick up the slack, that the obvious gap in leadership that seems to be occurring in the face of tragedies like this.
So while President Trump is handing out paper towels, and you know, we're really proud that we were able to deliver energy systems and water systems to remote areas where it is needed most. And you know, I really do hope that the conversation that took place yesterday in the meeting between the Puerto Rico governor and the president has elevated this issue back on to the president's agenda, and hopefully they'll continue to focus on Puerto Rico and the needs that are there, and particularly in remote areas, and I keep emphasizing that, and continue to have a presence there with FEMA, the Army Corps of Engineers on the ground, and not pull out, because that really scared us a week ago when we saw the president's tweet alluding to the fact that we've done enough as a country and Puerto Rico needs to stand on its own legs. I mean, the energy infrastructure is wiped out, the water infrastructure is wiped out, and we cannot turn our back on our fellow U.S. citizens.
It's a nihilistic approach. I mean, it's taken bootstrapping conservative ideals to a insane place.
Yeah, it is completely insane. And it was emotional, man. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, to be honest. It was a war zone. It's like, it was literally, it's like walking through a war zone. Every tree is down. There are toothpicks. There's not a leaf left on a tree. The hurricane basically stripped the trees down to their bark. And it's just, it is a surreal scene. And climate change, I mean, one of the things that, I mean, we're doing it. We're putting gas in the atmosphere, CO2. The more we burn, the more moist will come into the air from oceans that are warming up. And that will intensify storms and hurricanes, and it's just going to get worse. So we're not prepared for it. We need to stop burning this planet to hell, and we need to transition to renewable energy as fast as we can, and do our part. Go solar, drive an electric car, eat less meat, and meanwhile, not turn our back to our fellow citizens in Puerto Rico, who really do need us right now. There are 2 million people without power and 1 million people without water.
Marco Crapels, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Mi viejo San Juan, Isabela, Maricao, Fajardo, Dorado, Hormiguero, Sumacao, Luquillo, Atillo.
Vega Baja, Toa Baja, Mayagüez, yes. Otra vez, yes. Aguadilla, Quebradilla, Guayanilla, Juanadilla, Sicayé, hey.
It's almost like rain.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
Next on Sea Change Radio, let's take a listen to last year's interview with Becky Bond and Zach Exley, two senior advisors for the Bernie Sanders campaign. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Becky Bond and Zach Exley. They're former senior advisors from the Bernie Sanders campaign. And their latest book is Roadmap for Revolutionaries. So let's apply some of the lessons that you learned in terms of grassroots campaigning from the Bernie Sanders campaign. How can we apply that to environmental activism over the next 4 years? I know we saw Bill McKibben and others, including Becky, involved in trying to fight the Keystone XL pipeline, but that was with a rational administration in place. How does one begin to make waves and a positive impact in fighting for what they believe in terms of clean air and water over the next 4 years, dealing with these somewhat irrational actors?
Well, I think that's actually already happening. And one of the amazing things about the Bernie Sanders campaign was that the campaign took on all of the issues at once. It wasn't a single issue campaign. And the people who were involved in the campaign recognized that climate is not a wilderness issue. It's not really an environmental issue. It's a human rights issue that affects everyone, not just people who might say their top issue is the environment. And first and foremost among that is young people. And around the country, young people went for Bernie. They volunteered and voted for Bernie in huge numbers. And they cared. A lot of people in the media tried to suggest that these young people just wanted to get free stuff because Bernie was talking about free public college tuition. But when you went on college campuses or you talked to young people, you know, they would say that their number one issue was addressing the climate crisis. Their number two issue was usually addressing racial justice. Number three was probably money in politics. And number four was free college tuition. And because they were some of our most amazing volunteers adopting some of our tactics, like using Slack groups and Facebook groups for volunteers to coordinate management of activities together, they're still working with some of the playbook that we used on the campaign, and they're deeply involved in climate issues. And I'll give you one example, was that actually after the primary, a lot of the College Students for Bernie volunteers and a lot of the millennial Bernie staffers who've been part of the distributed organizing program, they actually went and worked on turning out students on campuses to vote, you know, against Trump in the election, using peer-to-peer text messaging, using conference calls, using canvassing on campus. And I think we're going to see a lot of the techniques and the software and a lot of the groups of volunteers that work together on the Bernie campaign, a lot of them went to show solidarity at Standing Rock and the Dakota Access Pipeline fight. And many of them are going to work to try and keep fossil fuels in the ground, but with a renewed sense that that volunteers can be the leaders and that they don't have to wait for paid staff in Washington, D.C. to come help give them an opportunity to do something big.
Well, that's the keys. While Donald Trump is president, do you think it'll be harder or easier to activate people when they have somebody at the top who doesn't believe in some fundamental truths like climate change?
What I find hard to understand is why President Obama, you know, who I saw speak in person in 2006, and he said to fight climate change, we need a economic mobilization on the scale of World War II, which that was spending half of our GDP to completely build a new economy for several years, right? And he said, that's what we need, guys. That's what we need to do. This was before he was running for president. And then when he becomes president, and he's got a Democratic Congress when he became president, and yet he did not go to the people. If I think Obama's the irrational one, actually, because Trump is behaving very rationally. He's got investments in these pipelines and in these oil companies, and all of his friends do. So they're behaving very rationally when they oppose, you know, doing anything against to change the economy around the environment. If only Obama had followed some, you know, big organizing practices and had gone to the American people like Trump is doing now for his agenda. And if, you know, whereas Trump's agenda appeal, you know, of deporting 11 million people and whatnot appeals to a small fringe, those are the folks that really get excited about his agenda. But just imagine if Obama had gone to the people and said, hey, not only are we going to create 100 million amazing jobs by, you know, spending the next several years totally rebooting our economy, but we're also going to transform our energy economy so that we've got basically no carbon emissions and have a really clean, green economy. People would have gotten so fired up about that.
Yeah, exactly. The second Van Jones got thrown overboard for having socialist leanings, that could have been a big red flag there, no pun intended. And that this was the green jobs evangelist for the Obama administration. He should have been elevated within that administration, not thrown aside.
Well, I think that's right, but I'm gonna sort of disagree with just even comparing President Obama to President Trump when it comes to climate, and I want to say that there is a lot that that people who want to protect the climate can do even during a Trump administration, and part of that is building on the success of being able to block and slow down the Keystone XL pipeline and also the Dakota Access pipeline, is that, you know, the demand for drilling more fossil fuels, you know, that's going to depend on being able to export this stuff. And so the extent to which states and local PUCs control export facilities, the extent to which activists who are blocking pipelines every inch of the way as they're built can make it more expensive and make it take more time to put this infrastructure in place, there is a role for individuals, especially individuals working together in their communities where this infrastructure is going in, to slow down or stop any progress towards taking more fossil fuels out of the ground that the Trump administration will be able to accomplish. So I think it's a dark time, obviously, and there was a bigger gap between, even though I wasn't happy with Clinton's environmental agenda, there was a bigger gap between Trump and Clinton than any two nominees for president, you know, in my lifetime. But there's still things that activists can do. In addition to that is, you know, trying to elect a new Congress in 2018 and a new president in 2020 so that we can get back to what Zach is saying, which is the need to have a comprehensive plan to rebuild our economy and make a sustainable energy future, not just a little bit around the edges, but let's get to 100% sustainable energy in this country. That could be part of the agenda, but not until we replace our leaders.
So somebody's driving in a car right now, and they're ready to jump back into the game and do something to make a positive change for the environment or any other political issue that they're passionate about. What would you recommend they do?
Again, I feel like sort of people might be a little disappointed with this answer, but I really think that we need to build power to take power, and I think there's going to be a lot of protests for the next 4 years, and you know, it's always good for people to go out and get involved, but we actually need to win elections and take power. Now, I know that a lot of people,
are they mutually exclusive?
No, they're not mutually exclusive, but what we need to do is stand up on a program that actually is going to be fantastic for the American people and that 100% embraces and does not back away from our shared vision of America as a multiracial, multiethnic place, right? And that totally says no to racism, xenophobia, and misogyny, right? And so, people are just used to thinking that, oh, okay, you want to talk about elections. The way we're going to win is we're going to have to, you know, not say anything, that might anger some people whose minds are primarily organized around racism and a fear or hatred of immigrants, right? And that's kind of, you know, what we've seen in a lot of Democratic politicians for a long time. So then, of course, this guy who comes out and Trump, who doesn't worry for 1 minute about offending people who disagree with him, and instead mobilizes his base. And his base is tiny. But because on the Democratic side, the vision has gotten so small that, you know, Trump was able to kind of sucker punch the establishment, with the way our electoral colleges laid out, and he was able to flip just a handful of counties in a few Rust Belt states, and that's what it took to get him in there. But then, on the other hand, we need to think about how he shouldn't have had any chance at all, because he was so out there and so crazy and just doing so many things to sabotage his campaign every single day. And so many people that would have liked to vote for him didn't. So we need to build a vision around that's big and that calls people to action to actually transform this country.
Becky Bond and Zach Exley, they're former senior advisors for the Bernie Sanders campaign, and they're the authors of Rules for Revolutionaries, How Big Organizing Can Change Everything. Becky, Zach, thanks so much for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Mark Anthony and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.